With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. This is a Friday Fives edition where we do five takeaways from the week and five things to look forward to. Last week, there was nothing to look forward to. We just decided to shit on the team because they took a shit on the mound and shit on the field. Anyway, this week, they swept the Rangers like they were supposed to do to the Cleveland baseball organization. Let's put what's in the past and look at what's coming up ahead. Big-ass series against the Red Sox, big series against the Blue Jays, though. Scott, how you feeling this week?
I mean, the playoffs start right now, right? That's
oh,
what it
they've
is.
Been, I mean, the playoffs have been started.
Yeah, but the actual playoffs, I mean, these are essentially play-in series, both of them. Mm-hmm. And then you have Tampa at the end, who would love to ruin the parade. Although they may just be a grown up at this point and just not give an F. Yeah, you know.
Well, like, Tampa's going to be in a unique situation because they, in essence, are deciding who they play in the American League Division Series.
Yeah, that's true. But huge series against Boston. Huge series against Tampa or Toronto. So it's going to be fun. Like, it's all on the line here. Obviously, the whole backs against the wall, all the cliches you can put about no more slipping up, no more mistakes, no more. This is where the talent has to shine. So they took care of business with Texas. That's what they had to do, and they did it. So
they did it. Yeah, they couldn't do it against Cleveland, and I thought that was going to be sort of like a final nail in the coffin. It's like, okay, if you're not going to be able to beat Cleveland, what are we even doing here? But
don't you know that the nails in the coffin don't exist?
I feel like these do you I don't know why I just thought of this reference. You seen Kill Bill?
Yes, not in a long time though.
When Uma Thurman punches her way out of the coffin, it's like that's what the Yankees are doing. It's
yeah,
like,
that's
pretty much all hope is lost, but they're just somehow slamming against the top of the coffin trying to jam their way out. All right, let's start with takeaways. The first one, Sevy. He's back, baby. He's back on the mound through two innings after missing 707 days. The last time we saw him on the mound was the 2019 ALCS. He's going to be a reliever. We figured that after all of his setbacks and everything like that, the long laundry list of injuries. But if he can be a reliever and if he can be an effective reliever, it's good to have him back because he's better than a lot of the other slop they got coming out of the bullpen.
He threw two innings on his first outing. First of all, I mean, it's awesome to see Sevy back. When he came out there, it was surreal. When they said 707 days, it's like, whoa, you got to do a double take to that one. Like, that's a really long time.
Isn't that almost exactly how long Jameson Taillon was out? For some reason, it's 700 days, right?
It's a lot of days. It's a lot of days between being on the mound in a Yankee uniform for him to all of a sudden to show up. But he looked good. There was a lot of energy there. I'm sure that the adrenaline was just, you know, coming out of his pores. But he looked good. I mean, he looked damn good. And it was very, very nice to see him on that mound. So just seeing Seve out there gives you, you know, that little bit of extraness in the hope factor of things. I understand they have to win a lot of games in these next 2-3 series, but having him out there and him throwing 2 innings in the first time he's out there, that just gives me a little bit more thought that he's going to be able to be stretched out even further. And I would not be surprised if we saw him throwing for, you know, more than 2 innings and progressively stretching it out. So yeah, he's a bullpen arm right now, but I was not expecting him to go 2 innings in that first one, especially in the rain. I did not think they were going to bring him back out in that.
That's the thing. It's like they you trotting him back out there in the rain. It's like, oh great, here we go. He's going to slip on the mound or something stupid, because that seems to be what happens with him. But but 2 innings is pretty much what he's been doing as he's working his way back.
Sure.
So I feel like they're just trying to keep that consistent. I don't know if they have plans to build him back up. Like, what's the point of building him from 2 innings to 3 innings? Actually, that might not be good, because then, in theory, if he's a 1 to a 1 plus inning reliever, he can be used multiple times in a short series. If he's a 3 inning pitcher, he really can't be used multiple times in a short series.
Depends on how many pitches he throws within those 2 innings, but fine. Yeah, whether it's 2 to 3 innings, whatever we get out of him is a good thing, because they're going to need people coming in behind whoever starts a game. And you get Seve for 2 innings, I will take Seve for 2 innings. If I get Seve for 1 inning, then that's better than anybody else out there.
Yeah, it was a easy way to ease him back in, aside from the rain, just, you know, the opponent and the game situation. So that was good. Second takeaway, and it's a question related to the bullpen: do you think the Yankees are now regretting dumping Luis Sessa basically for salary relief? Because the guy's been freaking unhittable with Cincinnati. 20 innings, stats with Cincinnati, 20 and two-thirds innings, 1.31 ERA, 0.77 whip, 17 strikeouts, only 1 walk, a .203 opponent batting average, and he's retired 25 batters in a row.
I've always been a Luis Sessa guy. I've never been shy to talk about that. Always been Tyler Wade guy too, and look at him now. Look, the guy is turned into a good pitcher. I've seen the chirping on Twitter about him not being in big situations in the Bronx. That's not true. That's pretty accurate. But he also was effective in everything he did. I think he had a 2-some ERA while he was with the Yankees even this year. But yeah, it's just frustrating when you see the way that it went down and how it went down and why it went down to get rid of a guy like that. And now you look at the bullpen and there's just a lot there's a lot to be desired. And while the reason I was like fine with it at one point, or at least I had come to terms with it, was because, first of all, I'm not overreacting to Luis Sessa either. Let's just get that straight. He's become a pretty good pitcher, but he was just never used in any leverage situations anyway. So that's the thing. And they were not going to re-sign him. They were going to lose him. So yes, it looked like a salary dump, and it was-ish, but I don't think he was going to be back either way anyway.
It wasn't just his salary they were dumping. They also traded Justin Wilson's salary to the Reds, and that's really what it was. You have to trade something.
No, that's what value. I mean. That was the dump. It was not Luis Sessa's salary.
Well, Luis Sessa was a million.
No,
whatever.
No, it was Wilson's salary. That was the reason it went down.
I know that, but whatever it is, it's a few million bucks that the Yankees didn't want to spend, and to not spend that, they gave up on a pitcher that could have helped them this year. And yes, when you're the New York Yankees, that you should not really be in a position where you have to choose between having a pitcher that can contribute to saving a few dollars on the luxury tax.
Well, remember, at the time, they also acquired Chase Holmes, and when he came in, we're like, oh, okay, you know, that's a one for one here. This guy's good. He's controlled now because he's in arbitration. But at the same time, you could have them both for this year.
Right.
And you know, it's not like we just replaced one guy with another. They needed extra bodies. They needed extra people to pitch out there. Luis Sessa is also a guy that you know, is stretched out a bit or can be stretched out and has you know, gone multiple innings. So he was just an asset that they didn't need to get rid of.
And at the time of the trade, it was for a player to be named later. And on August 30th, the Reds sent Jason Parker, okay, have a more generic name, but the Yankees, the Yankees thought that, you know, Britton was going to be there. They thought that Chad Green wasn't going to meltdown after meltdown. Loizaga wasn't injured. So there was a little bit more depth in the bullpen than
guys get hurt all the time. So
of course, guys get hurt all the time. And we even said at the time, like, I don't feel great about this because Luis Sessa was pitching pretty well.
That's the thing. He was pitching. They got rid of a guy who was pitching well. So it was one of those things. Look, is what it is. It's in the past. It's already gone. But yes, when you look back at a guy, and because he's been all over Twitter with the Cincinnatians, maybe it's because Yankees fans are also retweeting it, and that's why it's visible to us. But
he's been pitching really well. We love to torture ourselves with that kind of crap. It's like, oh, look what this guy that we gave up on. And the list is long of arms that the Yankees have given up and that had success in the bullpen elsewhere.
It goes back to, well, I could say the same thing about guys that you know, we have come over and had success as well, because there have been guys that have come over with success.
Maybe it's even when you tally it all up. It's probably, you know, a one for one, but think about, like, Kirby Yates went on to have some success. Giovanni Gallegos went on to have some success. Like, all of these guys and names and arms that it's like, yeah, who is this guy? Who cares? Oh, Brian Cashman's trading him. Ninja Cashman's trading him for this player at the deadline. It's like, then you look up a calendar year later and the guy's got a 1.59 ERA out of the bullpen in the National League. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. No, it's frustrating, but it is what it is. And the whole thing is that it goes back to the quote luxury tax, the salary cap.
That's the most frustrating part. That's the reason it happened.
That's the reason.
That's an annoying reason. Number three, Aroldis Chapman. You know, we've ragged on him, I think, deservingly. But since July 6th, I mean, it's a convenient date to pick because I believe on, like, July 5th, he allowed, like, 7 runs. So, or it was, like, in that week leading up to July 6th, remember he had the meltdown to Anaheim and the meltdown to the Mets? So it's just like you extend this window, like, 2 more days and his stats don't look so good anymore.
Why would you do that? We have to look, I'll
do that when it's convenient. And right now it's not convenient. It's convenient to look at July 6th and on. He's got 23 2/3 innings pitched and he's got a 1.90 ERA. Now, maybe he's been getting a little lucky. His FIP is 3.42, but he's got, what is that? What does that say, Scott? 6 walks per 9 innings.
Yeah, that's a lot of walks. That's as soon as I went down the line, my eyes just completely stopped dead on the walks per 9 innings. Yeah, that's
16,
a lot.
16 strikeouts per 9 innings, good. 6 walks per 9 innings, bad.
The problem with that is this week, it'll bite him in the ass at some point. Yeah. You can walk people against the Orioles and the Rangers and the Indians, but you can't walk people when you're playing good teams that in games that matter. So the pressure is just going to tick up and it's on the road.
So, I mean, I guess the takeaway here is that it's good that Aroldis Chapman has been better, but I still don't feel super comfortable when he comes in a game. What about you?
I mean, nobody feels comfortable in any position because the Yankees play these tight games. And I mean, I was like holding my breath when Chad Green came in the other day.
Oh,
but it worked out. He pitched well. It's going to come around, right? Because he's been so bad, but he's not actually that bad. He's not supposed to be that bad. He's the talent. We've seen him very, very good. In fact, many times when Yankees players were asked who's got the best fastball on the team, a lot of them said Chad Green, best fastball on the team. And that was when Chapman and Britton and everybody else is going right.
Was that before Gerrit Cole's on the team?
Yeah, before Gerrit Cole was on the team. But even still, like, he's, you know, talking about the bullpen, like, the guy's got electric stuff. So, you know, hopefully he can put that in the past. You can't get much worse. But yes, there's always that uncertainty with the guys that we're rolling out there. But
so the fourth takeaway, something that was going around the Yankees Twitter sphere this week, is people bitching that Luke Voit's not getting in the lineup enough. If you look at September playing time, Luke Voit has 47 plate appearances and he's got a 100 WRC plus, so exactly league average. Anthony Rizzo has 77 plate appearances. So what's quick math, Scott, on that? How many more plate appearances is that?
It's a lot more play. It's 30.
30. 30. You did it to a 112 WRC plus. So good amount more playing time for Anthony Rizzo. Couple questions here. Do you like that Anthony Rizzo is getting almost 2x the amount of playing time? Do you think the Yankees are going about this in the right way? Do you like, what do you think they should do going forward? Because people are looking at Voit's numbers since coming off the IL, and it's a lot better than a 100 WRC plus. But he, in September, has been pretty average. And he made that throwing error on Wednesday night that cost the Yankees a run. He's never been a good fielder. We know he's not a good fielder. So regardless of whether Luke Voit starts the game at first base or not, I don't want him ending the game at first base.
Yeah, and that limits what you can do with Rizzo. You have to sit him at that point. And, I mean, Judge has been DHing the past couple of nights. They're probably just giving him some break out there. When Stanton's in the field, you have to make a choice. When Stanton's DHing, you have to make a choice basically who's going to play of those guys, because then you can't have one of them DH. So, and here's the other thing, is that when you're looking at the matchups and you look at their splits, Rizzo hits left-handed pitching well. So it's not even as easy as saying, okay, against right-handed guys, you play Rizzo, and against lefties, you play Voit. It's not that easy, because Rizzo has good splits against left-handers. So, and I mean, as a defender, it's not even close. So you want Rizzo in the game. He's producing at a higher level. You could have a problem with however way they do it. The issue is that DH spot will clog up. They are trying to keep guys relatively rested, I think, with the DH, and use that as a rotation.
To your point about the DH, though, I mean, what's the point of resting at this point? You have 9 games left, and like you said, they're all playoff games at this point. What's the rest?
Up till this point, I mean, Judge was DHing the last couple nights. I mean, you know, maybe that's in preparation
starting
for this.
Starting Friday night in Boston. Stanton in the outfield, Voit at DH. Until you're no longer playing baseball. Seriously. What are you rest your guys.
They're not going to do that.
Well, they're fucking morons then. Because you rest your guys from April until the middle of September. So if you're in a race for the wild card or the playoffs, you can then play them every day down the stretch. Right? What's the point of resting them otherwise?
I mean, first of all, relax, because nobody's rested yet. And two, Stanton,
I already know they're going to be
maybe
rested.
Because
Stanton's not going to be in the lineup on Saturday because he played Friday night in the outfield.
Well, no, he'll DH.
But you know what I mean. He'll be DHing, or it's not going to be.
But here's the thing: it doesn't matter. You can also look down the line too, and at who's pitching, and if you have an opportunity for a guy that has bad numbers against a particular pitcher between Rizzo and Voit, like, it doesn't even matter as well. You can figure that out with the DH spot.
You know, Fenway actually...
And you might want to also think, defense-wise, who do you want in center at Fenway?
Well, so right field's the hardest position at Fenway outfield, actually.
Have to know they're all none of them are easy.
They're all weird, and none of them are easy. You're right. But right field is not a normal right field at Fenway Park. So this presents a unique situation for the Yankees, because... if you have Judge in center, that means Gallo's probably in left and Stanton's probably in right. But I don't think that's your optimal defense for Fenway Park. I would actually put Judge in right field, Gallo in center field, Stanton in left.
They're not playing Gallo in center. They've pretty much made that clear. Like, he's not been playing center field.
So I know, but that's what I would
They're not going to throw him into Fenway Park in center field.
Well, then
they're
going to
play Gardner. Gardner is the guy who's played there a billion times.
Then it's not going to be...
He knows it. He's the best center fielder on this team in Fenway Park.
Of course, he's the best center fielder on this team at Yellowstone Park, never mind Fenway Park. But he's not the best offensive player.
Is that next year's Field of Dream at Yellowstone?
No, they're playing the All-Star game there next year.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice. Thin air.
But I don't want Brett Gardner starting on Friday night. I'll have Brett Gardner come in a close game.
I got
game.
No problem with Brett Gardner starting. He's been one of the best. He seemingly has been one of the better Yankees since. The guy hasn't been playing poorly. He's been playing good defense. He's been getting on base. He's been hitting home runs. Give me gritty ass Brett Gardner at this point, who's got nothing to lose, and who has more intensity and competitiveness than practically everybody, and then they're in his little finger than they all do. I have no problem with Brett Gardner playing.
Okay.
At this point in the year.
I mean, I don't have a problem with him playing in a vacuum, but...
No, he's going to play at Fenway and bat him third.
No, I thought it was Yellowstone. Yeah. I guess I was just deciding between, okay, it's if Brett Gardner plays, that means Luke Voit doesn't play. That's basically the trade-off. Or Rizzo.
Yeah.
Speaking of Gallo, he's been hot, and he's got a 249, which is just silly. WRC plus since September 10th. It's a small-ish sample, but he's got seven home runs since September 10th and just 37 plate appearances. So we might be catching Gallo at one of those hot streaks at the right time.
Yeah, it's just a matter of how long that lasts until the next like stone cold streak is, because you know that's around the corner as well. So we don't have enough time or experience with Gallo to see, you know, how long these cold and hot streaks last. The cold streak lasted pretty good amount of time. I can't imagine the hot streak lasting the same amount of time. And as we know, there's no in between. So hopefully he can stretch this thing out, you know, and keep it going, because yeah, he's been playing really well.
I bet Rangers fans are looking at this like, just wait until next Wednesday, guys, and then he's done. That's how long the Gallo hot streaks last. Like, they know,
yeah,
exactly.
They're probably exactly. They were actually on the clock. They're like, we're playing them on the at the end of September, and he'll probably be cold again. But look, he's when you see
when that, he's hot, you see why it's like, yes. Oh shit. This guy.
Dude gets fired up too on that video that turned into a GIF of all of them celebrating in the dugout when somebody hit the home run. Gary Sanchez, when he hit the home run, fires me up when I watch that every single time. Gallo just lets the emotion fly.
Isn't Gallo's hair jarring every time he takes his hat or helmet off?
He makes it like that. He's got like the flip down.
I know.
He does that on purpose. It's part of the effect.
It's part of the Gallo experience.
Yeah.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, looking ahead. We actually have some things to look ahead to. Who do you want catching down the stretch and potentially in the wild card game, into the wild card, into the playoffs? Kay made an interesting note on the broadcast on Wednesday when Kluber was pitching. He casually slipped in, well, it seems like Kyle Higashioka has worked his way into being the personal catcher for Corey Kluber. And I'm sitting there making dinner, and I just look over my shoulder. I'm like, oh, has he now? Okay, now we've got 2/5 of the starting rotation with a personal catcher. Only need 3/5, and then it can't be a personal catcher anymore. Then he's just the starting catcher.
As soon as he said that, I was like, "This is here we go." The personal catcher phrase was used. Why did Kay have to do this to me?
You knew I was going to talk about it.
Yeah, who do I want starting? I want Gary Sanchez starting because he's got the most upside. That's who I want starting. When Garrett Cole's going to pitch, Kyle Higgy is going to be the catcher.
I'm not even going to attempt it
anymore. I screw it up every time. And to his fairness, and I like him as a player, as a man, I'm gonna give him the courtesy of saying Higgy. We know when he's gonna catch. So there's really actually not much left to be thought about, right? We know when he's gonna catch, and we know when Gary's gonna catch.
What was the point of starting Gary Sanchez on opening day with Garrett Cole if they had no intent on actually having Gary Sanchez catch Garrett Cole this year?
Because you can't say that there was no intent. They start off on the right foot.
One game.
The starter.
They gave him one game. They gave him one game.
Yeah, I don't know. It's stupid. We've talked about this ad nauseum. You got to prepare and play the guy during the season and get that chemistry between the two of them going at some point. Because what happens now, and this is exactly the situation we're in, if Gary Sanchez is, you know, goes on one of these hot streaks offensively, which we know he can, and, you know, he's thrown out guys, like if he all of a sudden shines as one of the best catchers in baseball, which he's got that ability, and he does in times, we'll show that, then you have no choice but to not play him during the outings for Cole and maybe Kluber if it's as set as Case says it is. But this is the problem. This is the exact situation you run into when this is an all-season thing and you don't get reps with the other guys. The alternative is to throw them out there together and, you know, risk the fact that they're not on the same page, that one of them is not going to be the best of their ability. You then put into play cross-ups. There's just a whole bunch of things that you don't want to happen because guys need reps together. It's just not a great situation. It's just shitty managing is what it is.
It's just shitty managing. It's shitty everything. It's just so obvious that they had no intent of having Gary Sanchez catch Garrett Cole this year. They knew from spring training, Higgy is Garrett Cole's catcher. But for appearances' sake, or to get the media off our back as if it was going to get them off their back, we're going to have Gary Sanchez catch on opening day. And of course, Garrett Cole has to throw on opening day. He's the ace. But game two that he pitches, it's going to be Higgy. As if it was going to fool everyone into thinking, oh, no, this isn't a personal catcher. It's just every game since opening day. And then minus the time that Higgy spent on the COVID IL.
Here's the difference. If you start Higgy on opening day, he is the starting catcher. The narrative that he's the starting catcher. If Garrett Cole pitched on the second game of the season, I bet they would have played Higgy.
You're right, but would you say the Yankees have a starting catcher? Who's their starting catcher?
It's Gary Sanchez. Yeah, I mean, well, you could break down the numbers and do it. He's got double the at-bats.
Yeah, but conceivably, the Yankees
He's got double the at-bats. It's a fact.
Conceivably, the Yankees make the wild card, right? They make the wild card. Garrett Cole's pitching. So you're maybe one and only playoff game. Your starting catcher doesn't play.
Correct. That is correct.
Okay. Number two, looking forward to the fact that this is probably the biggest Yankees-Red Sox series in a long time, probably since the 2018 playoffs, but certainly the biggest regular season series in a long time. Maybe some people will point to London because of like the circumstances around that. But as far as implications on the standings, I don't know how you get any bigger than this. Red Sox have won 7 games in a row. They've got a 2-game lead in the wild card over the Yankees. The Yankees are in the second wild card spot. I screenshot the notification that my phone sent me at 11:03 p.m. last night. You see this? Yankees in second wild card, as if they've clinched the second wild card. Hey, MLB app, they're in the second wild card today. They could be out of it tomorrow. Don't send me that notification.
Well, they just assume you're not dumb, and you understand that there's 3 series left in the season, so that you know
a lot
where
of dumb
they
people
are
out there, Scott. That have well,
those people went to the app, didn't they? It worked.
But the Yankees are 6-10 against Boston this year, which means no matter what they do this weekend, they could sweep them. The best they can do is 9-10 against the Red Sox, and so if they finish tied this season, the wild card game still happens at Fenway Park.
Yeah, so what they're looking to do, the Yankees, is they're not trying to. They're obviously trying to win all of these games, but they're scoreboard watching as well and to seeing what Toronto does, because if they lose a game and Toronto loses a game, they're fine because they realize that not catching the Red Sox in that spot, it doesn't matter if they do, right?
So you just have to be better than one of them.
Just got to be better than one of them. That's it. So really, what this boils down to is you got to be better than Toronto.
Yeah, because I think 2 games with 9 to play, even if you sweep the Red Sox, yes, you're a game up. You still, I mean, it's doable to finish ahead of them, but it's probably unlikely because you win, even if you win 2 out of 3, you only gain a game, right? So then you're down 1 with 6 to play.
Which is still feasible. Like,
of course it's feasible.
Look, the Red Sox can lose. They've collapsed before. It's happened
You've got to make, you're really, essentially you're down 3 to the Red Sox, okay? Because they have the tiebreaker, okay? So if you're the second wild card or they're the second wild card, you're playing them either way. The only way you're playing the game at home is if you finish 1 game ahead of them in the standings. So if you leave Fenway Park on Sunday, having won 2 out of 3 and you're down a game, you really have to gain 2 more games in order to have it mean anything. Because correct, what's the point of tying them? They get the game at home.
Exactly. That's my point. So, and what the Red Sox have to look forward to after that series is they play Toronto 3 times and then they play Washington 3 times. So they have...
One hard series. The Yankees have 2 hard series after them.
Yeah, I mean, hardish series. But the thing is they're positioned to not lose very many games. So yeah, you're really you either sweep or you're not catching the Red Sox is what it looks like. And from there, you have to beat the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And it does depend on what happens this while the Blue Jays are playing, because they're playing Minnesota. They're playing Minnesota today. They have 4 games against Minnesota. And then after the Yankees,
they're playing Minnesota tonight, right?
Yeah, they have 4 games. So if they play tonight, yeah, where the Yankees are
off. As people are listening to this, it's likely that the Yankees and Blue Jays are tied in the standings.
If they beat the
Twins tonight.
The Minnesota Twins. They've been losing to the Twins, though, haven't they? Yeah, they lost. Oh, they won.
Oh, they lost to Tampa.
They lost the first game of the series.
They lost to Tampa this week. Which we'll talk about in a second, that beef. But quickly, I want to also, one thing I'm looking forward to this weekend is what is Gerrit Cole right now? Is he healthy? Is his hamstring okay? He had a bad start against Cleveland on Sunday, and he's been bad all year against the Red Sox. He's got a 5.06 ERA in 16 innings pitched, 9 earned runs, 19 hits allowed against the Red Sox this year. What is Gerrit Cole right now? Because it doesn't, frankly, if Gerrit Cole's not healthy right now, pack it in. What's the point?
Well, yeah, and he's got to win games. I mean, he's got to win this game. Looking for him to win this game, got to win against Toronto as well before anything even matters potentially too.
It just dawned on me to do this. Let's do a little calendar. So
they're also playing Eovaldi. Eovaldi's pitching on Friday night, and Eovaldi's been shoving bats up the Yankees' asses all year. So not an easy task here because of what's going on. And Nestor on Saturday and Monty on Sunday.
We did Nestor dirty last episode. We didn't mention him in the ifs and like who would be pitching in the playoffs. Anyway, Gerrit Cole's pitching Friday the 24th. 5 days from there would be 1, 2, 3, 4. Wednesday the 29th against Toronto, and then 5 days from there would be this is like Mike Francesa. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, 4. He would line up for the wild card game. So you'd only need to bump him up to say if you need to win to get into the wild card game Sunday on the last day of the season against Tampa. And then in which case he would not be available for the wild card game start.
Let's just worry about the next 2 starts, which are definitely happening against the Red Sox tomorrow night and against the Toronto Blue Jays. The man's got to go out there and pitch like the ace that they signed him for. So I think what we'll see tomorrow night is if he's healthy or not. Because I think if he's healthy, if he's feeling 100%, there's no reason why he can't go out there and pitch, 7 strong innings. There's no reason for it, right? This is exactly what he should be doing. So I think we're going to find out if he's healthy tomorrow night. That's what we're going to find out. We know he's got the nuts up. He can nut up to a performance like this. He's done it before. He's got the God-given ability. Everybody knows that. He's got the stuff. He's got the mentality for it. It's a matter of, I think, if he's healthy or not. Because if he's not healthy or his body's starting to wear down because of these injuries as the start is progressing, then you're going to start to see problems. And Boston's offense is just going to jump on you. So we'll see. I'm very hopeful that he's healthy, because if he is, I'm expecting a good pitching performance.
So one thing that isn't really... directly related to the Yankees, but indirectly it is the little beef that the Rays and the Jays had this week with Kiermaier getting plunked after he accidentally, in air quotes, picked up one of the scouting cards that was dropped by a Blue Jay. Kiermaier said he thought it was one of his own teammates, which is why he picked it up. The Blue Jays saw it as him trying to get some insider information. Kevin Kiermaier did not apologize, as Kevin Kiermaier is one to do. And as the Rays are to do, they are the rats. And they, I've said this before, they play the rat card very, very well. And
why would he apologize for picking up trash in the outfield or on the way? Why would he apologize for that? And if it so happened to be a card that was from an outfielder, like, don't drop your shit. Why is he going to go walk over there and give it back to them? Oh, here you go. You drop this. This is ridiculous. It's a ridiculous concept to even think about the fact that he would just like pick it up and just go give it back to them. Don't drop it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Give it back. Give it back. It's just so childish.
It's one of the things that the Rays will use this, right? The Rays use these sorts of things to go on runs. We've seen them do it against the Yankees. So if they need to use anything as extra motivation, they're good at doing that. I don't know if that's Kevin Cash who can just orchestrate that, or if that's just sort of like the underdog mentality that the Rays players seemingly all have. You slight them, even if it's not a slight, they take it as a slight. They use it as bulletin board material, and they use it to win baseball games.
Well, that's because they're not big stars. That's why they do that on purpose. They do have Nelson Cruz. They have number one prospect in baseball who's, playing real baseball, who can hit as well as anybody. They're loaded. They are loaded. So this just goes back to, you know, when we were doing our preseason prediction, looking at the guys that they lost. Are we talking about any of those pitchers at this point? No, it doesn't matter, because what the Rays do is they just reload. They just reload. They bring in a bunch of wanderers as well, and they reload. And then they bring up guys from the minor leagues, and they reload. And then they trade one of their impact bullpen guys at the trade deadline, and they reload. It's just, they're such a well-run organization. It drives me insane.
It really does not matter what the names are, as far as on the pitching side anyway.
Well, no, it does. It does, because they have vetted the names. It matters to them because they know who they have.
But from
it's everybody
our perspective,
else. They're not looking for big names for baseball.
Right.
Fans.
We looked in the offseason and we were like, well, they traded Blake Snell. He's a former Cy Young winner. And they didn't re-sign Charlie Morton. And he's a whatever you want. He's a veteran big game pitcher. They have to get worse. That's what we said, because we saw the names.
I did not say, no. You keep saying, you always say we and bring me into shit. I said they would not miss a beat. I said they would not miss a beat because they will bring somebody else up. When what's his name? The Cy Young, Snell. When they lost him to injury, they didn't miss a beat. Like they've gone times with Snell where he was not good, and they didn't miss a beat. That these guys are built to not miss a beat. They're ready for that injury or a guy to walk out or a guy to get traded at the deadline. This is what they're built for. They're built very well. They're a well-run organization, top to bottom. Like the Yankees fans should look at that organization. And while it drives us nuts, and they're the Devil Rays, can't disrespect them anymore, because they are a real organization that knows how to not only identify but groom and develop talent. And I'm green with freaking envy.
All right, the last thing. This is a callback to an episode we did, I think on Monday, maybe it was the one before, talking about clearly Gleyber Torres is not the Yankees' future at shortstop. What is the Yankees' plans at shortstop? There was an article posted on NJ.com this week quoting a scout who said Anthony Volpe is the best position player he saw all year. He obviously skyrocketed up the prospect boards. He ranks, I believe, number 15 overall in MLB Pipeline's top 100 at this point. He is now the Yankees' number one prospect, even ahead of Jason Dominguez. MLB Pipeline puts him at a 2023 ETA. There's a little blurb, and one takeaway from the blurb I found interesting. It says, while Volpe isn't physically imposing, he's an advanced hitter with a compact right-handed swing. After posting an uncharacteristic 25% strikeout rate in his debut, he has made much more consistent contact during his first full season. His debut, we also have to remember, was 2019. He didn't play in the minors in 2020, as no one did in the minors. And so, like, it's just like he's two different people at this point. He's a young guy, so he's probably much more physically developed after that amount of time has passed. And I think, like, this goes on to say he could be a 20-homer threat in the majors. If things go right for him next year, he could start in Double A. He could be in Triple A. He could be in the majors at some point next year. And the Yankees, I do not think, have to be in on one of these massive 2023 or 2022 free agent shortstops.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how they address the need at shortstop for next year. And you know, maybe there's an option where they can pick up somebody as a plug-in piece or use somebody in the organization. You know, maybe we look next year and Urshela starts the year as a shortstop and he's just the guy in there. It also depends if they're willing or not willing to bring him up next year at all, because they may just have a hard line and say he's not coming up next year. And if that's the case, it makes things easier for planning purposes. But it's going to be hard to deny if we see this kid coming up and, you know, hitting his way through Double A, because you're right, he's in High A right now. If he starts in Double A, which most likely he will, if he plays well for a month and a half in Double A, they're going to put him in Triple A. And then it's up to him to break down that door or not. And it's, if the Yankees have a big name 5-year new guy out there and at shortstop, that's going to be, you know, practically impossible to do. So something would have to give. So I don't know how they're going to lock themselves into a long-term option at shortstop with him coming up and so highly touted. And who cares about his physical ability? I could care less if he's going to hit 20 home runs. 20 home runs, fine. 15 home runs, fine. 10 home runs, fine. I don't care. You play good defense. You have advanced batting skills, as they say. To me, that means he can spray the ball. He's gap to gap. That's the type of hitter, the type of athlete that I want over in that shortstop position for a long period of time. I don't need a power hitter in my shortstop spot. I don't need that. It's not something I need. We need complementary players. And if that's a guy that's going to be able to do that in the long term, sign me up all day long. I know another shortstop that came up with the Yankees that wasn't very physically imposing as he entered into the major leagues. You don't need to be that guy.
Eduardo Nunez,
yes. His hat flies off, but
we've had. I just think it's a very risky plan to go into next year.
It's extremely risky.
Saying Gio Urshela is our stopgap shortstop.
I'm not saying that's what they're going to do, but it's between a short option, or maybe one of these guys gets disrespected on the money, and who knows what happens with the collective bargaining agreement as well, and they take a larger dollar amount for a shorter amount of time. And it becomes like a 3-year deal or something like that. You know,
man,
I don't
Glaber
know.
Has really put them in a tough position by just not being able to play shortstop. Really has.
Yeah, he has, but he's starting to hit. He's hitting better now. The guy is most likely going to be walking in as their second baseman next year, which means they have to do other things to fit other people in. It'll be interesting. Also, you know, the trade market, looking at other options at shortstop potentially for short-term solutions, or at least mid-term solutions, so that if a guy like Volpe does come up and breaks down the door, you can make that move.
All right. That's going to do it for the Friday Fives. Again, really looking forward to this weekend. Biggest Yankee Red Sox regular season series in a very long time. And we've been saying rivalry needs to heat back up. It starts with playoff implications. That's going to heat the rivalry up right there.
You know what's making me nervous here is that this is Gerrit Cole versus Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the guy that we went out to get versus the guy that we had that was just, you know, discarded, and now shoves the ball directly up the other end of the New York Yankees when he comes out and pitches. And it's so help me God if he comes out there and just, you know, mows them down. It's going to really make me mad.
It's going to be a bad scene among Yankees Twitter if Eovaldi pitches like 7 innings, 1 run, and Cole can't get out of the 5th inning. It's going to be a real bad. We're going to be in a bad place, Yankee fans.
It's not going to be a good place. And then you have Nestor Cortes coming out on Saturday. And, you know, hopefully he's able to pull some magic out, you know, of his mustache and
can
be
I
able
talk
to
about nasty Nestor for a
there.
Second? So I tweeted the other day, I said, Nestor Cortes is good until he isn't. And people were being like, oh, you can't believe you're complaining about Nestor Cortes. I'm not complaining about Nestor Cortes, but he hits a wall every single game. And it's usually between 3 and 4 innings. Okay. So like,
no, that's not true. He's gone out and thrown
he has,
well.
But look at his game logs. It's 3 2/3 innings. It's 4 1/3 innings. It's 4 2/3 innings of two run ball, which is great. But then he hits a wall and you got to get him out of the game every single time. It's fine. They can manage it. He's helped them immensely, but that's what he is. Recognize what he is and play to that strength. Don't try and turn him into the second coming of Andy Pettit.
No, that's true. He's not going to go out there and give you 7 shutout dominant innings. Like, that's just not what he is. He pitches around things. He's crafty. He's a guy that's going to come in and be effective. If he can keep his pitch count down, then you might see him get another inning or two out of a start. But yeah, he's been phenomenal for the role that he's played. He's not your ideal starting pitcher in a situation like that. I'm happy with everything that he's done. In a perfect world, he's coming out of the bullpen and giving them some shutout innings as well. Or you're matching it up. It'll be interesting to see how they use Herman, I think, down the stretch as well. Because I think he's a guy that, you know, has the ability to team up with a Nestor Cortez. Or, you know, maybe Herman starts and Nestor Cortez comes in like he was doing with Chad Green when he was the opener in 2019. Was it 19? 20 didn't happen, right? Or maybe it was the beginning of 20. But that combination worked. You know, Nestor Cortez has the ability to come out of the bullpen as well. He doesn't have to be a starting pitcher. I have confidence in him coming out of the bullpen too.
Yeah, I think his ideal batter's face is like 18 to 21 in a game, Nestor Cortez.
Yeah, so we'll see. But that's who's pitching on Saturday. So if Friday doesn't go right, Friday doesn't go the way that we all need it to go, then it's Nestor Cortez in Fenway Park. That's a tough spot after losing the first one with Garrett Cole.
You're saying we might be just setting our sights.
I'm just saying it's a tough spot. Look, he's been in that position where he's pitched effectively. So I have confidence that he will.
Do you know
that he
can do it? Another thing though, Garrett Cole needs to shut down the Red Sox on Friday, if for any reason. Because if he doesn't, then what are we thinking going into a potential wild card game against them? It's like, oh, this guy's got a 5.5 ERA against the team this year. He's got beat up every time he's gone out there. That's not going to feel good.
You always talk about this feeling good piece of it. When do you ever feel good or confident about something that has to do with pinstripes in the New York
Yankees? I think a lot of things.
The confidence
I'm also talking about confidence level. So if the Red Sox hit Cole on Friday, do you agree that confidence level plays a factor in a batter? Do you think they will have confidence against Garrett Cole? They've hit him pretty much all season. But if he goes out there and shuts them down, then they got doubt. They have doubt in the back of their mind. Yeah, we hit him early in the season, but he just shut us down last outing.
I think these guys are professional baseball players that know that they can hit him because they've done it before. And whether they got one particular outing, it's not going to affect their confidence level in the next time. No, I think these guys are professional hitters. They have a very good offense who at any moment could strike for a number of runs. I think they're all very confident. I don't think that really affects much.
Right.
I think that I worry for Nestor Cortez if they come out of Friday feeling really good against Cole, and then feel really good against.
Oh, so you can feel good Cortez. Against you can have confidence and feel good against Cortez.
No, just like in a groove and just like immediately right after the, you know, there's a little bit of momentum there.
Potentially. Oh, there's momentum. Okay, yeah. So you're just saying different words for the same thing.
You're spacing it out by weeks. Weeks. I'm saying the next day.
Momentum
against Nestor Cortez, not against Garrett Cole again.
Pitcher Scott. Right.
And I hope Nestor Cortez shoves bats down their throats because that would be very satisfying. Very satisfying. He gives a different look. I love that.
End of the episode. Now we will talk to you on Monday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.